key my grandmother found in a chest, but which unlocks nothing. I kept it because I like how it feels in my hand. The heart shape of the top, and the jagged teeth at the bottom, and because not everything worth keeping has to be useful. Between my desk and my bed is a long window with gauzy purple curtains that let daylight through, even when the curtains are closed. And on the windowsill is a row of tiny colored bottles I bought one day at Elliott's Antiques. Sunlit purple, green, and gold. On the other side of my desk hangs my bulletin board, covered with drawings and little paintings, a pencil gray castle I started but never finished, a monkey painted on an emerald tissue paper rainforest, a colored pencil cartoon from 3 years ago of my guinea pigs dancing. I still like it, even if it's old and I can do better now. Well, there's something. I pick up my pencil and write on the first cards. Drawing. Guinea pig. Under my window, Nutmeg and Cinnamon purr happily, shuffling through the shavings in their cage. Nutmeg lifts her head, and I look away quick. Anytime they catch me watching them, my guinea pigs think I should feed them. Picking up the next card, I decide I shouldn't do just me words. That day, with a guitar, Jason could have used something fiery to say. Something juicier than sad or mad. A string of words pop to mind, but I don't want to get in trouble with his mother. So I choose gross, awesome, stinks a big one. I'm not going to show these to Mom, especially the last one. I don't remember seeing exclamation points on any of Jason's other cards, but awesome with a period doesn't seem right. And if gross has one exclamation point, stinks a big one needs at least three. My pen hovers over the sixth card. I could do another favorite, raspberry sherbet, or ice skating, or goldfish. I look past my messy closet. Open closet doors carefully. Sometimes things fall out. To the CDs, cassettes, and books lining the shelves near my bed. But Jason already has book and music. And who knows if he even likes raspberry sherbet. I could pick words about the clinic, hallway, or bookshelf, or magazine. Or I could do funny words like hoity-toity, or angry ones like, oh yeah, or hurt words like, I didn't mean to. There's a gazillion words and phrases I could choose, and none of them seem worth one of my two last cards. So I push the blank cards aside and draw pictures for the others. Drawing a guinea pig is easy. I sketch an oval, fat and compact, add black eyes, tiny rounded ears, tucked under feet, and a mess of every which way hair. A furry baked potato. The other words are harder. What does awesome look like? A smiley face? A sunrise? A double hot fudge sundae? My door creaks open a couple inches. A brown eye peeks through the crack. David never remembers to knock. It irritates me so much I taped this rule right above my doorknob. This is Catherine's room. David must knock. No toys in the fish tank, he says. I pull forward one of my two blank cards and write in big block letters an unbendable, sharp-cornered David word. Rule. By the time I get to the living room, David's already crouched in front of the fish tank, his smiling face reflected in the glass. Out the window behind the aquarium, I see Mom in the yard talking to the mailman. And in the fish tank, one of my old Barbie dolls sits on the gravel, her arm raised in a friendly wave, as though she's spotted Ken across the living room and is inviting him to join her. And don't forget the scuba equipment, darling. Barbie's pink lipstick smile beams through the water, her long hair floating around her like a tangle of white blonde kelp. The goldfish nibble at it, and Barbie, queen of the fishes, waves cheerfully. the goldfish are used to David dropping strange beings into their tank. They always swim over to check out the newest arrival and try to eat it. When that doesn't work, they accept it, along with their usual plastic plants and little castle. Remember the rule. I flip open the top of the aquarium. No toys in the fish tank. David nods, but I'm not fooled. He may not buy into the fish tank rule, but he's got this one down pat. If you want someone to leave you alone, agree with her. You can only put things in here that belong, I explain, like stuff you buy at a pet store. That's all that goes in the fish tank. David leans in for a closer view as I pull Barbie up through the water. Willpower is trying hard not to do something that you really want to do, said Frog. He glances to me, hopeful. Mom says David'll never learn to talk right if we keep letting him borrow words. But his face is so full of please, I say. You mean like trying not to eat all of these cookies? Asked Toad. Water from Barbie's hair trickles down my arm as I hold her over the fish tank, waiting for the dripping to stop. Through the window, I notice Mom's gone and the girl next door is in her yard with Ryan DeShane. He points at my house and the girl spins around. She waves. I drop Barbie to wave back. No toys in the fish tank, David cries. It's wet. It's okay, I say out of the corner of my smile. It was an accident. I'll get her back out. Ryan keeps talking, his hands moving like he's explaining something. I hope he isn't saying things about me, especially not how I yelled at him when he called David a retard on the bus. But her wave didn't seem like a making fun wave. It seemed more of a hi. What? Glancing to David, I see his pants wadded at his feet. I jump in front of the window to pull the curtains closed. David, go find Mom, now. I have a pants rule, too. Pantless brothers are not my problem. Sometimes things work out, but don't count on it. On Saturday, I find Mom in the kitchen pressing raw hamburger into patties. I was thinking we should invite the new neighbors to our barbecue, she says. This could be a nice chance to introduce ourselves. Great! I watch her hands shape another hamburger, and I know I'd better choose my next words carefully. What about David? What about him? Sometimes he forgets the rule about chewing with his mouth closed, or he drinks from someone else's soda, or they live next door, Catherine. Mom looks over the top of her glasses at me. You can't pretend he doesn't exist. I trace a line on the linoleum with my toe. I know, but it's hard enough to make new friends without worrying he'll do something embarrassing. I just want it to be nice today, a fun cookout with nothing going wrong. Dad and I'll watch him. That's actually the worst possible answer. It's only a teeny step from both parents watching to neither watching, each thinking the other's in charge. Maybe you could make a schedule and take turns? We'll both watch him. She pounds the hamburger with the palm of her left hand to flatten it. Why don't you run over and invite the neighbors now, so I'll know how much food to prepare? What time should I say? Tell them lunch will be at 1, though they're welcome to come early. She tears waxed paper from the roll and covers the layer of hamburgers. Heading for the hallway, I remember what I came into the kitchen to ask. Can we go to the mall later? I need some new colored pencils. My crimson and indigo are only about 2 inches long now, and I'd love more greens. Maybe you could earn them by doing extra babysitting? I grit my teeth to keep from snapping. If David wanted them, you'd buy them. But there's no point, because I already know her answer. That's different. She's right. It is different, and here's how. Everyone expects a tiny bit from him and a huge lot from me. In the hallway, I bounce between worrying things could go wrong. What if David spills something on his shorts and takes them off in front of everyone? And hoping things go right. The girl next door might really like me. Before I open the front door, I close my eyes and wish, just this once, let it be easy. Outside, Dad is pitching a tennis ball to David on the front lawn. Here it comes! David swings too late, and the ball thumps against the side of the porch.
All done? Let's watch TV?
Like I said, you have to try 10 times before you can watch TV. Dad picks another tennis ball from the pile on the grass at his feet. We have 5 balls left. Catherine, tell him when to swing. David and I sigh together. He lifts the plastic bat and moves his feet apart. Swing! I yell as the ball comes close. David misses anyway. You need a bigger ball, I tell Dad. He'd have a better chance. It'd help if we had a catcher, he replies. Want to play? I look across the fence pickets to the woman in her lawn chair reading. No thanks. Mom said I could invite the family next door to our cookout, and she's waiting to hear if they're coming. Dad bends to grab the next ball from the pile. And you'll be in charge of David. It's only half the truth, but if Dad thinks he's in charge, he won't wait for Mom to do something. All right, he says. Elbows up, get ready to swing, David. Walking to the fence, I notice the woman is younger than Mom, with short brown hair and sunglasses so dark I can't see her eyes. Excuse me. She sets her paperback face down on her lap. Hello. Hi, I live next door. I cringe at how stupid I sound. Of course I live next door. Why else would I be talking over our fence to her? She smiles. My daughter, Christy, will be excited to meet you. She's with her dad this weekend, but I'll send her over to introduce herself when she gets back. My heart drops. She's not home. That'd be great. My mom was wondering. David shrieks. I turn to see the plastic bat flying through the air. David runs in a tight circle, flailing his arms, his mouth wide in another ear-piercing howl. As Mom dashes down the porch steps, Dad calls to her, "It's all right. It's just a bee." I can't see our new neighbor's eyes behind her sunglasses, but her lips aren't smiling. I want to sink behind the fence and hide, but it wouldn't do any good. She'd still see me between the slats. Oh, look at the time, I say, checking my watch. Sorry, gotta go. Bye, the woman says. I'll tell Christy you stopped over. Hurrying for the house, I pass Mom sitting cross-legged on the grass with David thrashing in her arms. David's so big he doesn't fit on Mom's lap anymore, and they look twisted, an awkward tangle of elbows and knees, arms and legs. Dad picks up the plastic bat. Don't baby him, he says to Mom. The bee didn't even land on him. His back already to her, Dad doesn't see Mom's lowered eyebrows. He can't help being afraid, she snaps. Why can't you comfort him? It shouldn't always have to be me. You're the one who ran out of the house, Dad shoots back. I glance to the fence, hoping the lady next door can't hear them. She's reading, her book held high to block the sun. Shh, Mom soothes David. It's all right. A bee won't hurt you unless you bother him. I want to yell at her. It's not that easy. David can't even figure out what'll bother me. I kick a tennis ball out of my way and watch it skitter across the grass and bounce against the steps. Dad bends to pick up the tennis ball. As I run up the porch steps, he asks wearily, "Did you invite our new neighbors?" "They're busy," I lie, closing the front door behind me. Saying you'll do something means you have to do it. unless you have a very good excuse. In front of me, Mom holds David's hand as we walk up the ramp to the clinic. It's warm enough for the park today, I say, glancing across the parking lot to the strip of sun-sparkled ocean gleaming between Coastal Marine Supply and Otis's Hardware. After I give Jason his words, can we go? If David's doing well, Mom says. I watch the back of David's head and repeat in my mind, do well today, do well today. Inside, I sit on the waiting room couch, watching out the window. As soon as I see Jason's mother's van drive into the parking lot, I unload my backpack. Word cards, sketchbook, colored pencils, CD player, and headphones. If you hadn't insisted on changing your shirt, we wouldn't be late, Mrs. Morehouse says, pushing Jason's wheelchair into the waiting room. And I had to stop for gas. Hi, Jason. I hold the card secret between my palms, waiting while his mother moves his wheelchair up beside me. She walks over to her regular chair near Mrs. Frost, settling in with a magazine. I whisper to Jason, I picked some words about me and a few words I thought you should have. But when I open my hands, awesome seems too flashy and bold for his book, and I feel silly for bringing it. Jason looks at me, ready. I wince, sliding the card into an empty pocket in his communication book. I drew fireworks, but my first choice for awesome would have been this. I offer my CD player to him. Jason doesn't take it. He sits there, his Adam's apple rolling as he swallows. Help. On. I flash a look to his mother. It isn't far, she's saying to Mrs. Frost. 40 minutes or so. Maybe I can do this myself? I pull the headphones wide, hoping to drop them over Jason's ears. But as my hands come close, his hair tickles the underside of my wrist and surrounds my fingers. I hold my breath to keep from yanking my hands away as I position the headphones. Placing the CD player on his communication book, I push play. Jason startles. Sorry! I roll the volume way down. Music, loud, more. Everything all right, Catherine? Mrs. Morehouse asks. I think so. I roll the volume up until faint, stringy guitar music slips past the headphones into the waiting room. Jason's jaw tightens. Like guitar. Me too. I don't know if he can hear me with the headphones on, so I find Me Too in his book and tap it. Jason's head sways slightly to the music. Waiting for the song to finish, I run my thumb along an edge of my word cards. Mom talks to Carol, the receptionist explains something on the phone, and Jason's mother and Mrs. Frost discuss good restaurants that accommodate wheelchairs. Outside, a family wearing bright sweatshirts walks by the window, the father stopping to take a picture. Tourists! I check my watch. If I hurry, Mom and I'll still have time to go to the park. I feel a nudge on my arm. Oh! I hadn't noticed the song was over. Sliding my index finger under the top of the headphones, I pull gently. See that tourist family out the window? I ask, putting my CD player away. I think they're a good luck sign that summer's here. I hunt through my stack of cards to find the word I want good luck for the most. The last card I made, the one with a drawing of a girl's hand raised in a high wave. Friend. I have a new neighbor who's my age, I say. I haven't met her yet, but I'm hoping she's nice. He smiles. Catherine. Friend. I do have friends. My best friend is Melissa, but no one that lives near me. My neighborhood is mostly old people and families with little kids. Well, except the boy who lives on the corner. He's my age, but he stinks a big one. I put that card as far from my name as possible. You'll have to be careful when you use this one. The last time I yelled this, I had to sit in the front seat of the bus. No, I mean, Catherine, my friend. My lips feel dry. I lick them, though Mom always tells me not to. Sure, I say, even if I think of us more as clinic friends than always friends. Seeing Jason's finger on the word, I wonder why he didn't already have it. And this is a guinea pig. I wait for his hand to move. I have two of these at home. Their names are Cinnamon and Nutmeg, and I'll put guinea pig right here next to sandwich because eating is what they like best. I slide the card into the pocket. And I thought you might want gross. This lady I drew is eating cereal. But do you see this white thing on the spoon? It's a maggot. Jason curls his upper lip. It's even worse because it's half a maggot. I add the card to his book. And this word I picked for my brother, David. My other cards have the word printed small at the top, but the tall block letters of rule fill the card. David loves rules, so I use those to teach him. What rule? I usually don't share my rule collection with anyone but David. But Jason's different. David doesn't learn from watching other people, so I have to teach him everything. I open my sketchbook to my rules for David, figuring it's easier to show than explain. Take your shoes off at the doctor, but at the dentist, leave them on. If you want to get out of answering something, pretend you didn't hear. If someone is holding something you want, ask if you can have a turn. David has his own rules too, I say, but those rules don't make sense to anyone but him. What those rule? I sigh. David's got lots. One is the cellar door always has to be shut. Even if I'm only going downstairs to grab something, he'll race over and shut the door. Once he even locked it, and I got stuck down there with a whole bunch of spiders until Mom heard me yelling. And the worst part, it's not just our house. David'll hunt through other people's houses, too. I can't help seeing it in my mind. David running down Melissa's hallway, and Melissa's mother saying kindly, "Don't worry, Catherine, it's fine. David, that's the closet. That's the bathroom." Jason nods. Brother, me too. Matt. Is he younger than you? No, 5 years older. Oh, you're lucky then. You never have to babysit. As soon as the words leave my mouth, I want to swallow them back. Of course he couldn't babysit. When you say something stupid, gloss over it with super fast talking and maybe no one will notice. The next word is drawing. I picked it because it's one of my favorite things to do. Looking for a good empty pocket, it hits me. He can't draw. But Jason's already seen the word, so there's nothing to do but slide the card into a pocket beneath my name. What guinea pig eat? Huh? What guinea pig? Jason waits for me to say each word before he taps the next. Eat. What do guinea pigs eat? Yes. Oh. Mostly, they eat pellets from the pet store, but they'll eat almost anything. Once, I left a library book too close to their cage, and they ate off half the cover. That was hard to explain to the librarian, let me tell you. Jason laughs, a sharp bark like a Canada goose. His mother looks up from her magazine as I scan the room and see everyone watching us. But I think carrots are their favorite. I lean away from Jason. They can hear me snap a carrot all the way from the kitchen. Jason closes his lips tight. Thank you, Catherine. new words. No problem. I stare at the rows of plain black and white cards and wish that all his cards were colorful. Would you like me to make more? Awesome. Tell Mom. Excuse me, Mrs. Morehouse? Jason wants me to make him more words. She walks over, and I watch her eyebrows go up as her gaze sweeps Jason's book. How many cards would you like? She asks. I don't know where my voice comes from, but it says all of them. She looks surprised, but hands me the whole stack. When she's settled back with her magazine, I slide the blank cards into my shorts pocket. I'm sorry I drew you that day, I whisper to Jason. Don't like picture me. I didn't mean any. Hi, Jason! For the first time, I'm sorry to see his speech therapist stride into the waiting room. How's his day been going? She asks his mother. Wonderful, Mrs. Morehouse says. In fact, he was so anxious to come to speech today, he even changed his shirt for you. How nice, the therapist says. We do have fun, two fingers tapping her nose, then swinging down to her other hand. Don't we? Cheesy grin. Jason sneaks his hand over his cards. Speech. Woman. Stinks a big one. I nod and tap. Very much. As his therapist pushes his wheelchair toward the corridor, Jason glances back to me. See you Thursday, I say. His therapist's voice grows softer the farther she goes. I turn to my rule collection and add, some people think they know who you are, when really they don't. If you can only choose one, pick carefully. On Wednesday morning, the minivan is gone from the driveway next door, so I busy myself collecting words and phrases for Jason in the blank spaces of my sketchbook. Words from commercials, conversations, and books run between my doodles and across the backs of my drawings. The driveway remains empty until after dark. An hour before OT on Thursday, I lay my sketchbook open on my desk and flip the pages, hunting for the right words and phrases to put on Jason's cards. Why not? He already has why, but why not is pushier. Like Y with a fist on its hip. Out my window, I see the minivan still parked next door. Why not? Because Mom's calling clients and Dad's at work, so David's my responsibility. That's why. Just for an hour, Mom said, until we have to leave for OT. I've put on a Thomas the Tank Engine video, so he shouldn't be any trouble. I pull forward two blank cards and scrawl, yeah, right. Whatever. I know she needs me to babysit sometimes, but I hate when she tells me he shouldn't be any trouble. Trouble comes quick with David, and should doesn't have anything to do with it. He should remember to flush the toilet, too, but that doesn't mean it happens. When Mom had gone, I took my long mirror off my door and propped it at an angle against one corner of the living room, so I could work at my desk and still see David reflected in the mirror. Every few words I make, I glance out my bedroom doorway to the mirror. David stands at the TV, the remote in his hand. He loves rewinding the trains backward up the tracks and speeding them ahead to almost crashing over and over. I turn another sketchbook page and choose among the words written along the edge. Sure. You bet. Excellent. Perfect. Frustrating. Pretty. And dazzling. To jazz up and stretch the words Jason has in bigger directions. And joke so he can be sarcastic if he wants. I peek toward the mirror. The TV train steams ahead, billowing smoke toward the shed. Watch out! David repeats, a perfect imitation of the narrator's voice. But at the last second possible before the smash, David hits pause. Jumping in front of the frozen TV picture, he waves the remote in circles like it's a magic wand. Watch out! On the next page is my half-finished portrait of Jason. I pick up a pencil and add the details I couldn't add in the waiting room. Eyelashes, thick eyebrows, and the outline of his thin lips. Part of me wishes I could tear this picture out of my sketchbook and crumple it into a tight ball so I don't hear his mother scolding in my head when I see it. But the rest of me is bothered that it's incomplete. Too much like a secret. Are you busy? A girl's voice asks. I drop my pencil and flash a look from my unmade bed to the folded clothes piled on my bureau. Cinnamon and Nutmeg crane their necks to wink at Mom and the girl from next door standing in my doorway. I saw Christy coming up the walk, Mom says, smiling. Catherine, I have one more call to make. Could you keep an eye on David for a few more minutes? Then I'll take over, I promise. Before I can get out, no, I see Mom's legs in the mirror, hurrying back toward her office. David pushes rewind and Thomas speeds backward again. Come in. I offer my chair, but Christy sits on the edge of my desk, crossing her feet at the ankles. Are you busy? She asks. No. Seeing her up close, I know Christy will be popular. Not only for her straight brown hair, parted off center, shining down to her elbows, or because she looks just right, even wearing frayed jean shorts and a t-shirt. Christy radiates cool, and I know it as sure as I know David'll stop that speeding train at the last second. Part of me feels sorry because she doesn't look like a flashlights and Morse code kid, but the other part of me is excited. I'm glad Mrs. Bowman sold you her house, I say. Well, I guess technically the realtor sold it, but I'm glad your family bought it because I've always thought it would be great if a kid lived next door. Mrs. Bowman was nice, but she was really, really old. I clamp my teeth together to keep anything else dumb from escaping my mouth. Christy drags a strand of her hair between her fingers. I'm glad, too. I was scared I'd have to start school next year without knowing anyone. My lips spread to a smile, imagining Melissa's surprise as I introduce Christy into our group. This is my friend Christy, I'll say. We hung out together all summer. I glance out my doorway to the living room. Where's David? Ryan said there's a bus stop at the end of the street. I lick my bottom lip to keep from grimacing. At the corner. That's great. Christy continues to twist her strand of hair. I used to walk 3 blocks to catch the bus, even when it was freezing or raining. Mom'd say, take the umbrella, as though anyone carries an umbrella. David insists on bringing his bright red umbrella to school, even when it's only cloudy. My mom's like that, too. Leaving out isn't the same as lying. She always says, well, at least wear your hood. I continue, like I'd want hood hair. Christy smiles, letting the twisted strand fall back to her arm. Ryan said he lets kids wait in his house when it's raining, since he can see the bus come from there. But only if you're invited. I peek out the doorway into the empty living room. Part of me would like to tell Christy the truth, but I don't want our conversation to become about David. At the bus stop, I always tell him, you have your umbrella, grabbing the back of his jacket to keep him from following Ryan's friends up the steps. Going inside is for kids without umbrellas. I would be honest, but David doesn't understand invited and not invited. He thinks everything is for everyone. Ryan's nice, Christy says. Don't you think so? Nice as a cockroach. Want some sherbet? I ask. When you want to get out of answering something, distract the questioner with another question. What kind? Christy asks. Raspberry. David rushes through my doorway, his eyes wide with panic, an audio cassette in his hand. Fix it? The tape has pulled out of the cassette, hanging in a long, delicate loop. At first, I'm relieved that's all that's wrong until my guinea pigs start to squeal. With the cassette over one ear and his hand shielding the other, David yells, "Quiet, pigs!" Christy shoots a worried glance from David to the guinea pigs to me. I pry the cassette from David's fingers, knowing it'll be faster to deal with the tape than the tears filling his eyes. Don't worry, this'll only take a minute. I spin the cassette around and around on my finger, wishing I had two more hands, one to give the guinea pigs hay to quiet them, another to cover David's mouth as he shrieks. I spin the cassette so fast, my finger keeps slipping out of the tiny hole. When the tape lies flat and tight, I slide Frog and Toad together into my cassette player and push play. Arnold Lobel's deep voice joins the guinea pig squeals, and David's face lights up like Christmas morning, Halloween night, and his birthday, all rolled into one big grin. You fixed it. Go find Mom, I say, pressing the cassette into his hand, and tell her I'm done babysitting. Before I close the door, I peek into the living room to be sure David's heading toward Mom's office. He disappears down the hallway, swinging his arms. That must be hard, Christy says. Even regular little brothers are a pain. Regular snarls in my stomach. I grab my sticky notes and write, Dad, buy a new tape player, and stick it on the back of my door to remember to tell him again. To quiet my guinea pigs, I pull strings of Timothy hay from the little bale I keep under the cage. Nutmeg yips as Cinnamon steals her hay. They're so cute, Christy says. Can I hold them? Sure. I toss her a towel. Better put that on your lap, in case they pee. I slide one hand under Nutmeg's chest and cup her back legs with my other. Cinnamon weeks until I set her next to Nutmeg on Christy's lap, and the squealing turns to happy pig cooing. Nutmeg, I thought I'd never see you again. Say, what are you eating? Towel, medium rare, with a hint of fabric softener. Care for a bite? Don't mind if I do. My door bursts open. No toys in the fish tank, David announces. I'll be right back, I say to Christy between my clenched teeth. No problem, she says, stroking Nutmeg's neck. I close my door behind me so Christy won't see me run. Why? I sprint ahead of David. Why today? Because. A tiny cowboy stands bow-legged on the gravel at the bottom of the fish tank, one hand poised to grab his pistol, the other holding the end of a lasso hovering in a loop above his head. A goldfish swims right through the hole. Get back here, you pesky varmint! Plunging my hand into the water, fish swoosh past my fingers. I rescue the cowboy and throw him into the toy box. Grabbing David's wrist, I don't even wipe my hand first. What? David twists to get away. You're not going to ruin this for me. I yank him along behind me down the hallway to Mom's office. She's on the phone. All right, then, Mom says into the receiver. I'll look forward to hearing from you next week. I have company, I say, not caring about interrupting her, and you need to watch David. Mom holds up one finger for me to wait, but I push David ahead of me into the room. Her eyebrows come down. She grabs a puzzle off her bookshelf and dumps the pieces on the floor. Yes, that'll be fine, she says into the phone. David sits beside the hill of pieces. He can't stand to see puzzles undone, but he insists on doing the pieces in lines, like he's reading the puzzle. He doesn't look for all the red barn pieces or the daisies in the field or the glimmers of sunlit water. Left to right, top to bottom, that's his puzzle rule. And if you add a piece out of David's order, he'll take it back out, even if it fits. I slam Mom's office door on my way out. When I come back to my room, breathless from running down the hallway, I notice Nutmeg and Cinnamon are in their cage again. "Everything okay?" Christy asks. "I hope you don't mind that I looked at this." She's holding my sketchbook, open to the half-finished portrait of Jason. "Is he your boyfriend?" "No, just a boy I started drawing." Christy tilts her head in an "oh, really?" look. If you want someone to think something's not important, use "just" a lot. "He's just a boy I know from, well, I don't really know him, not very well. I just see him at," I check my watch. "It's almost time to leave for OT. I can't tell Christy I have to go, not the first time we've met, but I told Jason I'd see him today." Christy tosses my sketchbook onto my desk. My hands itch to flip the page, but that'll bring attention to it. "Want to watch TV?" Christy asks. If I say no, maybe I won't get another chance to hang out with her. I glance to Thomas the Tank Engine reflected in my mirror, his eyes closed, braced for a crash that'll never happen. From somewhere, David shrieks. "We could watch at my house," Christy says. That stings, even if I agree. "Sure," I say. "I'll tell my mom." All the way up Christy's walkway, I want to skip or run or twirl with my arms out like a 6-year-old. It feels deliciously easy to be visiting a friend's house without having to say first, "Sorry, David, this is for me. You can't come." Hearing Mom's car back out of the driveway, I turn to wave. She waves, but David sits alone in the back seat, hunched down, his hands over his ears. I follow Christy up the steps and through her front door. At someone else's house, you have to follow their rules. At a friend's house, everything is uncomplicated. No one drops toys in the fish tank. No one cares if the cellar door is open or closed. And no one shrieks unless there's a huge, hairy spider crawling up her arm. And they only have regular family rules. No snacks right before supper. Call if you're going to be late. Homework first. But the best part of being at a friend's house is I can be just me and put the sister part of me down. Christy's room looks like a page from a catalog, the sort of shiny catalog I get in the mail and can only afford a toothbrush or a poster from. But Christy's new pink swirled curtains match the fat comforter on her bed, which matches the pink and blue rug on her floor. It's all beautiful. But what I envy most is the neat row of things on her bureau. Photographs, makeup, her jewelry tree, and a long row of nail polish bottles. Everything out in the open, not jumbled in drawers like mine, out of David's sight. Lying next to Christy on her new-smelling pink comforter, I wish I wasn't wearing an old sun-faded t-shirt and had put on makeup this morning. "I think he's cute," Christy says, and I force my gaze back to the teen people spread in front of us. The boy in the magazine has perfect teeth and stabbing dark eyes. Christy taps the little box that says, "Up close and personal with Jake." He says his ideal date would be a sunset walk on the beach and a picnic supper she had prepared. He sounds cheap. Soon as I say it, I wish I could stuff the words back into my mouth. But Christy laughs. "Yeah, why can't he bring the picnic? If you get invited somewhere, you shouldn't have to bring supper." She flips onto her back. I roll over, too. Her ceiling is ordinary, plain white with a simple square glass light in the middle and two hooks, like upside-down question marks, holding nothing. I think Mrs. Bowman hung plants here. "Can you date yet?" Christy asks. I shrug. I know boys from school and church, but no one I'd want to go somewhere with. By myself. Well, not really by myself, because he'd be there too. Oh, shut up, I tell my tongue. You should ask that boy you drew on a date, Christy says. What's his name? I shift my shoulders, pretending I need to stretch so she won't notice I'm squirming. Is there any harm in telling his name? They're not likely to meet. Jason doesn't even go to the same school I do. Jason. My boyfriend and I broke up before I moved, Christy says. But I think Ryan likes me. His mom works at the community center where I volunteer. Did you know the community center is sponsoring a summer dance? It's for kids aged 8 to 17. You could ask Jason. You volunteer? I need to change the subject. Yeah, with the preschool day camp. It sounded fun when I signed up, but they want me to come every day now. And with going to Dad's every weekend, I haven't even had time to finish unpacking. I glance to her bureau, to the framed photograph of a man standing with a dog. My friend Melissa's parents are divorced. She's in California for the summer with her dad. My parents aren't divorced. She says it so sharp, I gasp. I'm sorry, I thought, because they're just separated. Christy reaches up to twirl a piece of hair in her fingers. They're just taking a break for a while. It's so quiet, I can hear birds outside and cars driving past on the road. Christy holds the very end of the lock of hair and it spins back, falling against the path of freckles across her nose. Want to shoot some baskets? She asks, pushing her hair away. I don't know which box my basketball's in, but it's in the garage somewhere. Sure. I can't help checking off a list of differences in each room we pass through. No locks on the doors. No little kid videos next to the TV. No safety plugs in the outlets. And a box of cookies left out on the kitchen table. No one worried someone will eat them all at once. Christy's garage is full of boxes, bikes, rakes, a snowblower, and a clutter of other things. We open boxes until we find her basketball. I hope you're not real good. Christy passes me the ball. I'm only kinda good. Me too, I say relieved. We play one-on-one until I see Dad pull into our driveway with David. David runs up the walkway to our house, clutching his video. Hi! Dad smiles, coming toward the fence. It's a nice surprise to drive in and see you next door, Kath. First, I've told him not to call me Kath, because it sounds too much like he's calling me a baby cow. And second, why is it such a surprise I have a friend next door? You need to get David a new tape player. I set up for a shot. The one he has keeps pulling his cassettes apart, and I have to fix them. The ball bounces off the rim. Can't you say hello first? Dad asks. Hello, but don't forget I'm sick of fixing his cassettes. I'm Catherine's dad. He nods to Christy. It's nice to have you and your family in the neighborhood. What are your parents? Oh, wow. I check my watch. It's getting late. Yeah, I have to start supper for my mom. Christy shoots the ball. I'll see you? Definitely. I get the ball and pass it to her, loving the hollow thump it makes hitting her hands. I'll be in a minute, Dad calls. I need to get something from the car. I walk home, easy as you please. In the living room, I can barely keep from skipping past Mom reading the newspaper on the couch. Next to her, David shakes his hands with excitement as a video preview plays on the TV. Did you have fun? Mom asks me. The newspaper pages make a whispery sound as she folds them. Christy seems like a nice girl. I nod. David slaps his legs with his hands. Rated PG for adventure, action, and peril. Jason missed you today, Mom says. And my happiness deflates like a balloon with the smallest tear. He said that? Well, actually, what he said was, tell Catherine all gone stinks a big one. Mom looks over the top of her glasses, giving the long, what have you been up to, young lady, stare. Who's Jason? Dad says from the doorway, a teasing smirk on his face. A boy at David's OT place. I watch Dad's eyebrows shoot upward, and I roll my eyes. He's just a boy. It's not like he's a boy or anything. Oh, I almost forgot. Jason sent you something, Mom says. It's in a bag on the kitchen table.
PG-13, David shouts. Parents strongly cautioned.
I stroll, ho-hum, to the kitchen, but I'm curious. On the table, I find a paper bag and reach inside. My fingers touch something tickly, cold. I pull out a big bunch of carrots, the feathery green tops attached. Untangling a carrot from the bunch, I imagine Cinnamon and Nutmeg in their cage, shuffling through the shavings, drinking from the water bottle. I snap the carrot in half. From down the hall comes a crazed burst of squealing, then a shriek. Quiet, pigs! By the time I reach my room, David's standing in my doorway, his hands over his ears. Sorry. I push past him. Go back to your video. They'll stop in a minute. Cinnamon and Nutmeg jostle each other, their front feet high against the side of the cage. Out of my way, fatso. Who are you calling fat, hairball? That carrot is mine. I toss carrot bits into the cage, and a shaving, flying scuffle breaks out, finally settling into happy chortling and chewing sounds. A trickle of guilt curls through me. Why can't the world be simpler, like it is for guinea pigs? They only have a few rules. Crying will get you attention. If it fits in your mouth, it's food. Scream if you don't get your share. But I can make it up to Jason on Tuesday. I already know how. If it fits in your mouth, it's food. Tuesday, I bring something to the clinic I've never brought before. Something that means I need to leave the top of my backpack unzipped, and instead of swinging it to my shoulder, I carry it gingerly in my arms. Jason is already there when I arrive, his wheelchair parked next to my usual spot on the couch. Hi. I sit beside him, arranging my backpack on my lap. Thanks for the carrots. Did? Guinea pig. Like. They thought they were awesome. In fact, I pull my backpack zipper all the way down. A furry, eager face pops out. What's up? And more to the point, what's for lunch? Pellets? Carrots? Ooh, is that carpeting down there? This is Nutmeg, I say, cradling her against my chest. And she says, thanks for the carrots. Nutmeg has chocolate brown whorls of fur, glossy black eyes, and a friendly personality. Of my two guinea pigs, I figured she'd be more tolerant of Jason's sudden movements and noises. Jason's mouth hangs slack. Would you like to pet her? I ask. She might squeal, but she doesn't bite. Awesome. Nutmeg walks across Jason's communication book. She sniffs the air and poops on Van. Sorry. I jump to grab a tissue from the box on the receptionist's desk. Nutmeg, what kind of hello is that? Gross. Hello. I clean Jason's book. You can say that again. Gross. Hello. Very funny. I reach into the front pocket of my backpack. Speaking of jokes, I made words for you. When I look up, Jason is stroking Nutmeg's back with his fingertips. I can see by the clench of Jason's jaw how hard he's struggling to control his movements to not frighten her. When he brings his hand away, he's trembling. I pretend not to notice, afraid it'll embarrass him. This first card is joke. I thought you could use this word when you're telling a joke or being sarcastic to make sure the other person knows you're kidding. Like, word. And this is whatever. I lean over to whisper. It's good for annoying your mother. At least it has that effect on mine. I demonstrate, swinging my gaze to the ceiling. Whatever. Jason grins. Good job. Whatever. I move Nutmeg over so I can slide the cards, word after word, in Jason's book. And this is secret. I thought sometimes we might want to talk without everyone hearing us. When one of us taps secret, we'll switch to only using your cards. Want to try it? Yes. I look around for something to talk about. Out the window, a man hurries across the parking lot, his beagle on a leash. Do you see that guy? I ask, pointing. Let's imagine who he is. The man dashes past the windows. The beagle trots beside him, head down, sniffing. Jason taps, late. 4. Dog. Show. I give Jason a thumbs up. Good job. My turn. I imagine the man and his dog as a perfect spy team, too ordinary to be noticed. But Jason doesn't have spy or secret agent or even mysterious. Searching Jason's book, man is a secret is the best I can do. I was imagining them a secret agent team, I say finally. Maybe we can talk about music instead? Yes. I pull my CD player from the front pocket of my backpack. This is my favorite CD. Putting the headphones over Jason's ears isn't as awkward as last time, but I still fight the urge to shiver as his hair brushes my fingers and the backs of my hands. Who? Music. I check his book, but of course, there's no card. It's... Jason taps. Secret. I clamp my hand over my mouth. Don't speak. Catherine, make word. Who? I don't have a blank card, so I remove goodbye from Jason's book and draw on the back. It's not a great picture of Avril Lavigne, but I'm in a hurry. I don't bother to slide it in Jason's book, just lay the card on top. It's a temporary word, and he'll need goodbye more. Jason studies the picture, headphones on, music playing. Avril Lavigne. Stupid. What? I startle Nutmeg into skittering across Jason's book. Jason grins. Joke. I dip my head in my best imitation of Mom's no-nonsense look. You think you're funny, don't you? I lift one side of the headphones so he'll hear me better. My next card is going to say, you big jerk. Secret. I spoke again. I bite my tongue to keep from using it and scan my word choices, lifting Nutmeg to see what she's sitting on. Jason taps, like, Avril Lavigne. Me too, is all I can find to say. Hi, Jason. Jason scowls as I take the headphones off his ears. Speech, woman, yell, all the time. He taps, I can't talk, but I hear fine. Hi, Jason, his therapist repeats, louder. How's his day been going? She asks his mother. Jason's hand moves. Loud day. What a sweet little animal, the speech therapist says. But what's it doing? I glance at Nutmeg, busy chewing the edge of goodbye. I lunge for her. I'm sorry, Jason. He smiles. Odd bye, guinea pig. Watching his therapist push Jason's chair down the hallway, I hold